Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. Welcoming you to this June 27th, is that right? June 27th edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That is on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. That is correct. The York College radio community is dialed in and tuned in to WBAI. Well, today, shortly, we'll be joined by the Reverend Sheraton Todd, Yeary, who is the Vice President for Strategic Engagement and Programs of the Rainbow Push Coalition. I've just returned from there and had an incredibly powerful engagement. Of course, I am a former executive director of the National Rainbow Coalition. Of course, I was deputy campaign manager for Reverend Jesse Jackson's 1988 campaign. Sounds like ancient history, but in some ways, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Just quickly want to indicate to you that we want to salute and take note of the victory of the Revolutionary Progressive Forces in Colombia, where the revolutionary forces that resisted the right-wing retrograde forces for so many years, the FARC coming out of putting down their arms after having resisted these reactionary regimes, and part of that was protecting and advances the interests of Afro descendants. We've talked about that here on Vantage Point. Well, they won. Not only did they win for the first time in Colombia, that will be an Afro-descendant, a black woman will be president, vice president, that is, of Colombia. And speaking of those things that you may not necessarily hear elsewhere, we have direct pipeline to those forces in Colombia. We've had those programs here on WBAI. And though the next week or so is tied up, I do plan to have James Early, whom you know from, is widely considered one of the great experts on Afro descendants all over the Caribbean and Central and South America, will be joining us. But we'll be bringing on a voice, a direct voice from Colombia to talk about this. And that is what was being discussed by our in distress program operator, who says he's in dire straits when he says he's making the pitch, because you do get that kind of information here on WBAI, at least by way of Vantage Point and many, many other programs. And so the tower drive is important, all of the things that were talked about in terms of the rent and all those things to keep this community listener station. That's right. We are the listeners that the station depends on, nowhere else. It's incredibly important. So I am going to make a pledge today of $100, and I'm asking all of our friends and supporters to do likewise, to organize and mobilize our voices and our resources in order to pull out of this debt that is being discussed. And that's calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950 in order to make your pledge. And you can tell people you're giving a shout out to Vantage Point and to Professor Dr. Ron Daniels in that regard. And I'll be sending later on today, I'll go online, because you can go to give2wbai.org, making a note. So I will go online to make my contribution. Just made a contribution to WPFW. I support these two stations in particular because they've always been very supportive of the work that we do with the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. Also, just a quick reminder, tomorrow is primary election day? I guess it's primary election day tomorrow.
Yes, it is.
And we need people to get we're going to be talking about that later. I'm going to be on the soapbox later. Y'all may throw me off the radio later because I am fired up about this voting. It is the voting tomorrow. I can already predict it's going to be abysmal. It should not be. We have got to shake off this apathy. Voting matters. So get out there tomorrow and cast your vote. And you should be doing research. And now it's not all your fault, because some of these people are trifling, lazy, They don't do a good job in many regards, but we got to do this in spite of them. Now to the meat of our program for today. We're joined, as I said before, by one of the brightest leaders on the scene today, not heard of as much as we need to hear from him. He's been on, done some work with the Institute of the Black World 21st Century around gentrification and other issues. He is the Reverend Dr. Sheridan Todd Yeary. And again, I said before, he is the person who is in charge of strategic programs for the National Rainbow Coalition. That is the organization of the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. Reverend Yeary, welcome to Vantage Point.
Dr. Ron Daniels, always good to be with you, my brother. I appreciate the work that you do and the voice that you give to the interest of our people. Good to be with you today.
Well, I want to, before we get into the substance of our conversation, because I'm returning from Rainbow Push, and it was a great conference. In particular, I had an opportunity to witness and experience that powerful panel on voting. And your concluding prescriptions were particularly, to me, insightful and helpful. So we want to get around to that. But I just want to introduce you more thoroughly to our audience. And I know that there was a time when you hailed from the great city of Baltimore, Maryland, but I don't know if that's where you're born or not. But let's get a little bit about who Reverend Dr. Yeary is in terms of your upbringing. Where were you born? Some of your early life experiences, and what is it that eventually drove you to be in the field of Black liberation theology, the prophetic gospel, the social gospel, all of those good things, as far as I'm concerned?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. I was born in Augusta, Georgia, in the Deep South. My birth certificate identifies my race as colored. My mother gave birth to me on the colored wing of University Hospital. My early years were spent in Augusta, and then our family moved to Durham, North Carolina, another prominent place of development for the interest of our people. And so I finished high school there. My adolescent years were there. And so I was really kind of formed and framed in the crucible of Black resistance, the genius of our people advancing the interest and the causes, whether we're talking about Pilgrim Life Insurance Company in Augusta, or if we're talking about North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company in Durham. I was always surrounded by those who were unapologetically passionate about moving our people forward and never giving in to the plight of our conditions. My mother was a media specialist, so she was a librarian. Books were always around the house. You had to have a library, not just a book. And so reading was not just fundamental. It was a prerequisite if you were going to get in the house. You had to, had to spend some time in thought and conversation. I went to Morehouse for a couple of years. My mother, being a strict disciplinarian, said, obviously, you don't understand that I sent you to go to Morehouse, not to Spelman. And so she quickly called me back and said, you need to get it together. From there, I spent some time just kind of getting back on track, needing to make sure that I would have money, because my mother worked actually three jobs to raise me and my brother after she and my stepfather divorced. And so I ended up in the military for a while before I spent time doing air traffic control, actually, in Chicago. I ended up in Chicago. That's where my father lived. And so I would spend the summers there. And then all of my adult life was in Chicago, where I started pastoring and went to grad school. Went to seminary at Garrett in Evanston, did my PhD at Northwestern in religion and personality and society, which is kind of a blend of psychology of religion and sociology of religion. And then the opportunity to come to Baltimore was presented to me in 2007, and I actually followed Raphael Warnock here. When he left here to go to Ebenezer in Atlanta, I came to Baltimore, which is where I am now, largely working around the policy issues on Capitol Hill, but also commuting back and forth to Chicago, working with Reverend Jackson. My midlife crisis was I went to law school because I recognized doing lobbying work that we would always go in with the right intentions and come away with the wrong outcomes. And I needed to understand better how law was actually crafted, how it's written, how it's framed. And so I studied law and graduated. Now I pastor, I practice law, civil rights and human rights law. That was my focus in law school. And also work with Reverend Jackson on that broader international human rights agenda, where we've done a lot of important things together. So that's kind of the quick flyover. I have four kids, and so they're the joy. So they keep me young and remind me that I need to stay young. So I'm glad right. to be in the movement.
All right, we appreciate that so much. And next, would you just give us everybody? Obviously, we love Reverend Jackson. We know that he's having health challenges. He once proclaimed he'd rather burn out than rust out, so he keeps soldiering on. But just give our audience a little update on Reverend Jackson.
Well, Reverend Jackson, to your point, Doc, is still pressing. The body, he publicly acknowledged that he was diagnosed with Parkinson's probably 7 years ago. And so we've watched him fight a body that is failing him over time, but his mind is sharp,
right?
And his commitment is still unassailed. And so he's doing well. I don't know where. Well, I know where he is today because there's a primary in Illinois tomorrow. Jonathan Jackson, his son, is running in the Democratic primary for the first congressional district in Illinois. So it's probably out. Rallying the troops to get out to vote and supporting his son to continue the work of legislative action on Capitol Hill.
All right. We really appreciate that. Now let's get to this matter of voting, which is for some people in the progressive movement and for activists, sometimes it's controversial to some degree. A powerful, powerful panel you had on stage, Latasha Brown and Barbara Arnwine. And I mean, it was just, man, it was just an incredible panel. And you concluded by really offering, really putting the voting in a sort of context, but also giving some prescriptions about the importance of voting as a tool. And I'm going to say within the struggle for Black liberation. So would you just sort of share some of that, some of your thoughts around, particularly in this era? We'll talk more about that later, but just share some of your thoughts along those lines and what you were saying to an audience that was listening to this powerful panel.
Well, thank you for raising that point. When we consider what it means to be citizen, and we look at the trajectory of our history as African-descended people in America, the emblem of our struggle is access to the ballot box. The reason I say that is that's the mechanism by which ultimate determination about what happens with public funds is consummated. When we look at public roads, public schools, public health, public safety writ large, all of that is the outcome of the political process that is affirmed and confirmed by the people who choose to exercise their right to vote. The problem, as you have alluded to, is that we undervote our interest. We actually compromise what we say we ultimately want because of frustrations in the moment. And if we look at how we've gotten to this point, we didn't get here by overnight transformation, resistance, revolution. Every generation had to rise to the occasion to do their part to continue to move us forward to get to where we are, and there's still more work to be done. So what I shared on stage was the remarks that I'd heard the night before at the gospel concert, because faith and justice actually do go together. The expression of our worldview and our spirituality is inextricably tied to the advancement of our justice interests. But the comment that was made was about something that Reverend Jackson had actually said some years ago, that the two things you can always count on is ambush and sabotage.
Mm.
Well, what I thought about, though, is that ambush and sabotage operate differently. Ambush is external. What we've seen come from this Supreme Court, that's ambush. What we've seen come by way of nefarious laws passed in state legislature. That's ambush. Sabotage is internal. Sabotage is what happens when the forces that cause us to step away from the obligation of the moment hold sway. And then we begin to come away with arguments like, I don't like what I'm seeing, so I'm just going to stay home and not vote. What that basically means is, in Reverend Jackson's words, the only thing worse than slavery is adapting to it. We have chosen by our consent to stay out, to take whatever comes our way, because by participating in the process, when we don't get immediately what we've asked for, we feel like the best way to prove some arbitrary point to folks who ultimately don't care is that we're going to sit home. Basically, that gives the keys to the car to someone else that didn't want to give you a ride in the first place. And if we don't keep showing up as they did, think about the Montgomery bus boycott. They were expecting that boycott to last a matter of days. It lasted over a year. And they stayed with it. They stuck with it until ultimately the barriers came down in terms of the dignity of our folk. And if we betray the sacrifices of our ancestors, you talk about ancestors all the time. Our ancestors are amongst us. We do them a disservice. We desecrate their memory when we take their sacrifice for granted in helping us get here. Literacy tests, toll taxes, and all of the things that were an assault on human dignity that they were saying they would go through, whatever they had to go through. We would promise God that we would serve until we die. We've got to make sure that we don't give up in this moment. And the one thing we must do is not sabotage the interests, not of our own, but of our children and our grandchildren who are depending on us to be consistent, committed soldiers for the enterprise of true liberation for our people, come what may, even if it means we got to stand in long lines, bring our own water, pack like we did on the bus, a little chicken sandwich, wrap it up in that little white bread, put it in some aluminum foil so it gets all stuck to the chicken from the grease like we were riding on the bus back in the day. We've got to do whatever it takes to make sure that our interest and the pure cause of liberation is never abandoned because we have sabotaged our own interest.
Well, so I really, really found that powerful and wanted you to bring that to this conversation. I was really happy to not only see you, but Frank Watkins, whom I had been trying to contact through various means unsuccessfully for whatever reason. And because the other thing that Reverend Jackson and I have been hammering it in a sort of slightly different way, but it's the same theme. Reverend Jackson used to just go state by state, and he would lay out the voting age, the black voting age population. And then he would go to an election, maybe one that was lost or one that was won, and he would show the margin of victory. So just hypothetically, you have a race in New York, and well, let's take Virginia, a real example of what happened in Virginia with Terry McAuliffe and I forget the other person's name. Very close race, relatively speaking. And I said, almost without fear of contradiction, if you go and look at the voting age population and the actual black voter turnout, there were thousands upon thousands upon thousands of black folks who essentially, given what you've said, yielded for whatever reason, and I'm not necessarily saying this negatively, yielded to or were succumbed to that internal sabotage. And so the flip side of that is to see the black vote as the potential margin of victory. And people kind of don't quite grab that, the margin of victory, particularly in these trying times. So I guess my question to you is, given what we are seeing, I mean, we just saw Roe v. Wade overturned, half a century of precedent. It was ironic that I think it must have been Cornyn, the guy from Texas who quickly raised the precedent of Plessy versus Ferguson, which is interesting, saying, oh, a precedent can be broken. And, of course, there are precedents, and then there are precedents. We have the hearings being conducted by Benny Thompson eloquently and powerfully on January 6th, the rise of white nationalism in a way that, and the legitimization and normalization of it in a way that is just, it's almost mind-boggling. And so the question is, and we have to really talk about what I call him the Orange Man or Agent Orange, and MAGAism, not just the person, but the philosophy behind it. The question becomes, given what's at stake, how valuable, how important is the black vote moving forward in terms of the danger to democracy, the danger to the culture of rights?
Here's what I often say to my students in the classroom, to my congregation on Sunday morning. If voting were not that important, if it really didn't matter, why do the forces that oppose us put up such energy in trying to limit our access to the ballot box? And what I often use as the example is the game Monopoly. A lot of times we argue over the pieces. Who's going to be the cat? Who's going to be the cannon? Who's going to be the shoe? Nobody wants to be the thimble because they haven't figured out what it is or what it does. But the most important thing with Monopoly is the rules. And if we understand the rules of capitalism and development, I know there is arguments that there are better economic systems, and I don't disagree. But right now, the rules of this game are Monopoly. If we don't invest and engage in that process, then we seed the fight for liberation, which has to be economic, political, social, psychological, all of those things, political. If we don't engage, then basically we have given ourselves over to the forces that our now ancestor, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, told us was the fear of white genetic annihilation, which is actually at play, mm-hmm. not only in the rulings around when we say Roe was about abortion, Roe was about the agency of women's bodies. And when we consider how black women's bodies have been exploited and devastated and violated over and over again as part of that very system that we have been fighting to transform and modify and adjust, all of those things, we got to remember that this process of engagement, this resistance has to be tied to how we engage in the process of political resistance, that is the vote. And whenever I have heard the arguments about why we should just sit out, it's like blacks who were liberated, in air quotes, right, by the Emancipation Proclamation, which really just freed them to be able to participate in the fight for their liberation by joining the military, which there was a huge prohibition against. It's like saying, all right, I'm not going to fight for my liberation because I don't like the terms. We have to move beyond this notion about just trying to get by on pass and go for $200, trying to then chip our way past Park Place and Boardwalk because we know we can't afford the rent, when in the meantime, those two little purple properties right after you pass go, we don't develop, we don't demand. All we do is we try to land on chance to get a get-out-of-jail-free card in the prison injustice, the criminal injustice process, or land on community chests where we can get a little help with the light there. We've got to change the mentality and the psychology of how we approach this, because otherwise, remember Bobby Wright's major piece about the psychopathic racial personality and other essence, is we've got to make sure that in this moment, the CK, the spirit, the essence, the life essence of who we are, will not surrender simply because we are meeting with resistance. The whole thing around it is that there's a recognition that soul force is so powerful that there has to be an obstacle put up at every turn to do the one thing that will cause us to be defeated, and that's to buy into our own discouragement. And so voting is an affirmation not only of the struggle that got us here, but our willingness to keep up this fight until we get everything that we demanded. And so when you talk about reparations and all of these things that they're afraid to talk about for whatever reason, because they know that the price is going to be high because the benefit to the nation economically, they have not sufficiently calculated and is still ongoing. Those are the kinds of issues. And if they figure out that they can wait us out by just making it harder for us to do whatever it is we have to do, then eventually there will not be reparations. There will not be justice. There will not be a future for our grandchildren. We will go back to the days, as we've seen with the former president, where the arcane ideas that were we thought were relegated to the museum, the notions of just overt white racial hostility would be long gone. And we got to just understand it. I'll give you another case in point real quick, and then I'll kind of give you back your show. If we look at Kentucky, Charles Booker is going to run against Rand Paul for the United States Senate in November. The assumption is that Kentucky is a red state. You've got Mitch McConnell from Kentucky, you got Rand Paul sitting there, and most of the state tends to look red outside of Louisville and Lexington. But when you look at the numbers, there are more registered Democrats in Kentucky than there are registered Republicans. That's from the state's own database. They track it. They update it every 30 days. So what we have is an indifference to our interests that is now toxic, and it is killing the chance of liberating the futures of our children. And I promise you, that's a judgment that I don't want to face by whatever maker you may face after your days are gone and you transition to the invisible spectrum from this visible space. If we don't do better by them, I promise you, the divine, that which is ultimately holy, is not only going to be displeased, there ought to be an ultimate damnation for all of us for failing to do what we must do.
That leads me really to next to my final question. At the end of the day, I also want to give people an opportunity to tell people how to connect with Keep Hope Alive, the radio show, as well as the Rainbow Push Coalition. But what is it that black leadership can be doing, given the what I think is arguably one of the most consequential elections in the history of this nation? It may be the most consequential since the Civil War. I mean, we could go back and debate and all of those different issues, but it is certainly the 2022 midterms that are coming up are consequential. What is it that black leadership can be doing to perhaps provide not only the information, but I dare say we are an emotive people. We are a feeling people. What can black leadership be doing to provide the inspiration and the motivation to get our people to, as I say, march on ballot boxes in 2022?
Well, that's a perfect question, right? The first thing we have to do is organize, right? Part of organizing our community is that we have to organize three key things, right? People, power, and money, right? If we don't organize the people to show up in mass, one of the things that's happening inside faith communities is there's a public questioning about whether or not the institutions that have been the facilitators and partners of our thriving over our history are even relevant in this conversation. And so there's a dismissiveness about black leadership that is just overt. They don't even hide it anymore because there's such a palatable level of frustration that they don't think we'll mobilize in this moment. So we got to organize. We got to organize people, be ready to go. Here's how we organize people, right? We got to register. We got to verify our registration. So we've got to then do voter education. We got to understand more than what we see on TV is going to be on that ballot. Some of those ballot initiatives will have to do with public monies going to certain interests. There will be other ballot initiatives that we really need to understand. And so what I often do is when the sample ballot comes out, I actually take my Bible studies and turn them into civics processes where we look at the ballot to really understand what's there. And then we got to really mobilize. We got to get out and vote. We can't keep giving lip service to this thing about voting, because I promise you, these remind me, my mother was from the Deep South, and she had her view, and so was my father from Tennessee. She had this view about Southern races. And if we look at what's happening politically, in many of the instances, the regression that we see in state legislatures mirror the states that were south of the Mason-Dixon line. So you're seeing the resurgence of slave ideology in real time. If we do not fight back in this moment, the next plantation may not look like the plantations of the history books, but they will be plantations nonetheless. And our liberty will actually be taken with the assistance of one who, though he looks like us in appearance, he don't think like us in terms of his analysis. And he is coming after everything that we have fought so diligently for to be able to give us the kinds of opportunities that we enjoy today, even as we continue to do the work to further expand and to get the restitution that we are owed for the experience we've had in America.
Well, finally, give us an update on, well, not an update, but just tell us how we can, how the listening audience can by either phone or email, or how do people connect with the Rainbow Push Coalition?
Well, the easiest way to do it is go to rainbowpush.org, rainbowpush.org. You can see all of the things that are going on, not only from headquarters in Chicago, but through all of our satellites across the country, where we focus on everything from technology to what's happening in the automotive industry to what's happening in the access to capital space on Wall Street, and then the issues that affect us on Main Street. So rainbowpush.org. You can also follow Reverend Jackson. Continue to pray for him, but encourage him. A lot of times folks say when they see him on TV, ooh, he looks bad. Well, let me suggest to you that if you were almost 81 years old battling Parkinson, but you still had the heart of the champion who is willing to go anywhere through anything for the issues that matter to us, you might kind of look the same. So let's pray for him and not just critique and criticize. You may not agree with everything he says or does, but I don't think you'll find a more committed champion than Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson Sr. You can check out Keep Hope Alive on Sundays. That's when his nationally syndicated radio program is on. You can check your local listings. Just look at Keep Hope Alive. Google Keep Hope Alive with Reverend Jesse Jackson to find the radio station in your area to be able to track all of it. And then you can find me on Facebook, Todd Yeary, on Twitter at ST Yeary, Y-E-A-R-Y. And you'll know. And if you see Dr. Ron Daniels somewhere, I'm trying to hang out with him because he's about the business of liberating our people.
All right, my brother, appreciate you so much spending time with us. I sent you a message or two earlier today. We got some things we got to connect on, need your support and help with, and I know you'll be willing to do it. But I really, really appreciate you taking time out to share with our audience today. It's been extremely helpful. I'm getting ready to go up on the soapbox and back it up. So thank you so much again for spending your time with us on Vantage Point.
Good to be with you, my brother. Do your thing. Call me later.
All right. Okay, that was the Reverend.
Recording in progress.
That was the Reverend Sheraton Todd Yeary talking about the power of the black vote. And I want to talk about the power of the black vote also, but I want to do that with our listening audience, giving you time to call in. I'm going to give the number out so you can line up now to react. And I expect we'll have a vigorous conversation because I anticipate some people are going to not be so happy with this idea of voting, and that's okay. But I am going to be talking about it big time. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. As the professor goes up on the soapbox, before we open up those phones, let me just say this. Democracy with Roe v. Wade going down, which is a part of a culture of rights. I mean, the right of a woman to choose. You don't have to be for or against abortion. It is about the right of a woman to make a choice. And this is particularly important for black women and women of color, poor women. That is gone. And it's gone because of, they say, all skin folk ain't kin folk. Because in part of the now vocal leadership of one Clarence Thomas, that's right, Thomas. I will never forget when he was up for confirmation, there were black leaders who will remain nameless who were talking about, oh, you know, give the brother a break. He's a brother. Well, that lets you know right off the bat, this is not just about skin color. This is about the content of your ideology, the content about of your values. And when we say all skin folk ain't kinfolk, we mean it in terms of your values, your ideology, what you stand for. And at our best, black folk are not only for our own liberation, we stand for the liberation of all oppressed people. But this retrograde Clarence Thomas is out there undoing decades of culture of rights progress and threatening more. Because next, marriage equality is on the line and other issues. He wants to get all up in your stuff. And he's leading the way. He's now getting his voice up real strong. So culture rights is in danger. With the insurrection, Benny Thompson, you're leading this hearing. You're hearing democracy is in danger. You clearly see the forces of white supremacy and white nationalism. In a way that, I mean, could Obama have ever had a white nationalist in the White House? No. Could he have done a smidgen of what the Orange Man, I call him also Agent Orange, ad by way of Spike Lee, has done? Answer to that question is, would not have happened. And so we are looking at democracy in danger in part because of MAGAism. Not just the person, the philosophy of all of these. And you know what happened? Them white folks, most of them who were sitting on the sidelines, who were not voting, have decided to vote. And they have snatched the Republican Party from up under the traditional conservatives who were bad enough. They just snatched it. So now you got the Looney Tunes and the conspiracy theorists, and but all of that is about stopping black people primarily and brown people and people of color and resisting the changes in terms of expanding this nation to be a more inclusive cultural, ethnic, religious nation. They don't like it. They want the good old days of white male hegemony and patriarchy. And of course, we ain't going back, as John Lewis said. We're not going back. But the point to be remembered is that this decision on the Supreme Court was made possible because the Orange Man triumphed. I mean, who would have ever thought he would win in the first place? People didn't take him seriously, but he was serious at a heart attack. And there were people who were willing to put up with his egomaniacal personality. All of this nastiness and maliciousness that is about his personality, because the right wing had an agenda and they were willing to look the other way because they understood that the judiciary matters, the judges, the federal judge and the Supreme Court matters. Now on our side, ignored him. We ignored the Orange Man. We didn't like him. But we didn't like the bitch. What I mean by that, Hillary Clinton, oh, she did this, she did that, and this and that, as if there's some perfect candidate out there. The Supreme Court matters. Voting matters. I can guarantee you that if Hillary Clinton had won, she would not have appointed three retrograde, radical, right-wing judges to the Supreme Court who now will provide the judicial capstone for this retrograde agenda. If for no other reason, that alone was enough to vote for the bitch, you know, that people don't particularly like. And I don't like it, so let's talk about it. And somebody said the other day, I was somewhere in a conversation, and the person was talking about voting. They said, you ain't voting for Jesus. We ain't talking about voting for Jesus. So all of them have their difficulties and their contradictions, even the best of them. But for me, it was not even a lesser evil choice. It was clearly the better choice. When you look at the reality of having to make critical choices when you're dealing with mature, and I don't mean that in any pejorative sense, mature decisions about how to advance the race and how to advance the nation. So the Supreme Court matters and voting matters. And the black vote matters. I have said over and over again, the biggest political party in America is not the Democrats, it's not the Republicans, it is non-voters. In the last election, for all of the hullabaloo about how many people turned out to vote, and it was a record turnout by American standards. Somewhere just north of 60% of the eligible voters in this country voted. But guess what? If you're in Canada, if you were in England, France, Germany, Italy, the numbers are somewhere in the neighborhood of 85%, 90%. There were 80 million people in the last election, 80 million who did not vote. You look at Kentucky, Reverend Yeary pointed out, I can guarantee you there are enough black votes, and I'm not accusing us, I'm not blaming us, I'm just saying, I'm just laying out there, there's enough black votes in Kentucky alone to defeat Rand Paul, who, if not openly, implicitly, his policies are anti-black. And that is true across the margin. They're now talking about the Republicans in the suburbs are returning back to the Republican Party. But guess what? When you look at that map, and Steve Kornacki, who's really good at it, he's talking about, well, you know, the rural areas have come in Pennsylvania, but we're waiting on the vote from where? Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. Guess where that is? That's where we be at. That's where the black people's at. Now, the question is, how many of the black people will actually turn out and vote? Because if we turn out and vote, we will outvote those in the suburbs. Because all of them ain't going to vote. Which means we have power disproportionate to our numbers. And our battle cry ought to be, we ain't letting nobody turn us around. And I've said over and over again, anytime, and Reverend Yeary confirmed it, anytime people are trying to stop you from doing something, that says, you better check it out. Particularly if white folks try to stop you from doing something. Because they understand that those who vote will control public policy. You're going to go out here tomorrow, you're going to stop at that red light. You're not going out here without no insurance in the state of New York. You're going to have your seatbelt on. You're going to do a whole lot of things. Why? Because it was determined by public policy. You're going to do that. If you voted on it, fine, don't matter. Somebody voted on it, and that becomes the public policy. Well, we got a whole lot of things that we need to deal with in terms of public policy, not the least of which is reparations and the need to really bust up this white nationalist hegemonic plot. Now, do we need to do more than that in terms of the empire and transforming this nation? You damn well we need to do that. But the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step, with the vision of knowing where we're going. And so black votes matter. And let's be about the business of organizing and galvanizing those black votes for this forthcoming election. And some of y'all need to get out here tomorrow and get into some exercise. I don't care if they put the voting box in the desert. We coming. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Let's go to our listening audience. You're on with the professor on the soapbox. You're on the air.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, I just want to begin with, in the Bible it says we perish because of lack of knowledge. And most people in this country do, I say 90%, do not know what we're under, what government we're under. We're supposed to be governing ourselves. This is not a democracy, this is a republic. And you have to know how... the Supreme Court has nothing to do with law, but a lot of people think they do. They have to make a decision, okay, based on the Constitution. Like, for instance, most people don't know what a writ of quorumto is. You're talking about voting, but writ of quorumto, okay, I don't know if you ever heard of that, but writ of quorumto is very powerful. Matter of fact, you can get anybody out of office with a writ of quorumto. They didn't leave it up to voting. I know because, thank God, I went to court and I used a writ of quorumto. A writ of quorumto is very powerful.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this question, because I must confess, you just taught me something today that I don't know anything about. And I'm a professor and I've taught political science and I have no idea what you're talking about, which is an indictment on my knowledge. I need to get deeper. What I do understand is tomorrow in the state of New York, there's going to be decisions made. People are going to be elected who are going to make decisions about a whole bunch of things that affect our lives. And when it comes up to this next election, you know, or yep. You, I would think you know, that it will make a difference in terms of who is in the White House, who sits on the Supreme Court, who sits in these positions. The question is, what do we do to mobilize and organize our people to exercise the power of the black vote? You have some ideas on that?
I'm going to tell you this, okay? I'll guarantee you this. If somebody pick up and read that Constitution, okay, because they have two kind of courts. They have a legislation court, and they have a constitutional court. That's why we have separation of powers. I heard you talking about traffic tickets and everything. That's
yeah, but look, brother, look. I asked a very simple question. You know what I mean? I'm sure you understand the fact that it's a republic, it's a federal system, all that's good. But it comes down to very basic questions, right? And everybody who's going out to vote is not in the first instance going to know all those things. I think we need civic classes in order to teach that. But right now we see on television, live and on radio, the existential threat and what could make a difference. In Georgia, where Raphael Warnock won for the first time because black folks did mobilize and organize. We see a Senate that is blocking the ability to, in fact, bust the filibuster, which you could teach people about. If we had about two more to four more senators, that would break that logjam. You could expand the Supreme Court. You could do a lot of things. That's the kind of civic lesson I'm talking about. So let's have you come back with some more of this more profound knowledge after we've had a chance to do it. Let me just shift now to some more callers. Good afternoon. You're on the soapbox with the professor. You're on the air.
I'm on the soapbox. Hello?
You're on with the professor.
Hey, professor. My name is DeLon Love, and I've turned 46. And one thing I'm proud to say is that the young kids call me OG now.
OG. So we need OGs. No question about it.
So, in my profession, I'm a barber, and I got a barbershop in Brooklyn, New York. So I was wondering, if we was going to get this organization back, how do we get the people to get back to the black churches and make them realize that our churches is an organization for us to organize? Because you have communities, if you have an 8-block radius, you have people over here, that's an 8-block radius, and our communities can be developed through strong men and leaderships through our churches, so we can get our black men and our black families back in the churches, so we can make our children understand the difference between a girl and a boy, and we can get our mindsets back and understand the plight that our fathers and forefathers done for us as a culture, as a people, as a community, people of color. How can we redirect and get our young people back into the churches, because it's a huge assault on our leadership. It's a huge assault on what our people have done for us as a community. What the forefathers, like you was talking about, the bus boycott, like it seemed like our generation is taking all of this stuff for granted. Like we don't care.
Let me just say this. There's a lot to pack in, and let me just say that I think it has to be done with women and men. We cannot leave Fannie Lou Hamer out. We cannot leave Sojourner Truth. We cannot leave Harriet Tubman. We cannot leave Mary McLeod Bethune. We cannot leave all of these great black women who contributed mightily to our development and success, as well as the mothers and fathers, and this mothers, ordinary black women, who were often forced because of patriarchy to take a back seat, but still kept on keeping on. Number one, you are in my organizing paradigm. Where you're sitting is one of the places I'd like to be most. I'm old school. I like barbershops and beauty salons. Why? Because you hear in the barbershop and beauty salon, you hear where our people are. So you're in a unique position to pass out information, to share information and whatnot. But you're absolutely right. And you heard Reverend Yuri talk about it. We need more of our churches to step up. You know, the prayer service is good. The prayer service, all that is great, obviously. But thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. So therefore, we need to translate some of those into educational sessions. We need to be in a position, and the church has to be careful because it's a 501c3 institution. By the way, when you're talking about law, so therefore you could lose your nonprofit status. So you have to be careful about how you do it. But you can do it on a nonpartisan basis. The other thing you said is I have, and I don't know if I have it in my book or not. I have long since believed in something you just talked about. If every church just took the precinct they're in, they ain't got to take the whole world, just that precinct. And I don't care whether you're black, white, male, female, whatever. Just begin to service your precinct. Go door to door. Survey people. See what their needs are. Touch people. Whether they join the church or not immediately is not so much the question. But get out there and proselytize and evangelize, not just by preaching so per se, though you really want to carry the word, but you want to exemplify it. And what you will find is eventually you'll be able to register those people, get them engaged in civic education. And on election day, every church, if they don't do nothing else, just take the people in that precinct with your cars, your vans, and get them to the poll. And that's part of the souls to the polls concept. That is one of the things that could be super powerful. So I think you're onto something, my brother, and I really, really appreciate your contribution. Oh, we're out of time already? I can't even take one more call. Well, we have to pick up this again on the other side because I think we had one more caller, but we don't have time to get that caller in because we're about out of time. But this is something, folk, that I'm obviously very passionate about. I know we have differences. People have different views on it and whatever. But we have got to, I believe, that we are the force. The black vote is the force, not in a negative, narrow sense, that will rescue not only ourselves. And it has nothing to do with Biden, none of them, really. We're doing this for us because we are here. And we are the source that will transform not only ourselves, but transform this nation and help to transform the world. That's just how powerful I believe that we are. It ain't just about the black vote, too. There are boycotts and all kinds of other things we need to do as well. Anyway, this is the professor, been up on the soapbox, talking about the power of the black vote. We'll be returned to this theme time and time again in the coming weeks because democracy is in danger. Our culture of rights is in danger. And we are the people we've been looking for in order to rescue it. We'll see you again here next week on Vantage Point.